Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Pichot, and welcome to the Liberty Advisor Show. Today's guest is someone who is a very big name in the world of retirement planning and is actually widely considered to be the guy when it comes to retirement income planning. He's a multiple-time best-selling author. I've actually got a collection of his books. Well, I guess this one's a CD over here. We've got the Paychecks and Playchecks, which if you guys have not either gotten the audiobook or the book, I would definitely highly recommend that. I've probably bought it over 10 times. We've got Don't Worry, Retire Happy, I think another version of it as well, the Retirement Income Masters, and I recently moved, so I probably have some of the other books that are somewhere around storage. And as an adult, I probably own more of your books than just about anybody else. So I would definitely recommend it. You guys can check it out at Amazon.com. And Tom is also a member of the Elite Million Dollar Speakers Group of the National Speakers Association, which means Mr. Hegnan does not come cheap, but he does help financial companies increase their agents, brokers, and advisors' knowledge, which then helps increase those companies' bottom line. He's spoken at numerous Fortune 500 companies that are everyday companies that everybody has heard of. Spoken, he's sort of like the retirement planner's retirement planner. And, honestly, I could probably spend the next hour just going over his bio. I mean, that's another book in and of itself. And thank you for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Yeah, and really, you know, the concepts that are in your books are probably some of the most important things anyone could possibly know. It doesn't matter if you're the best, you know, basketball player, the best NFL player. If you don't know how to manage your money and you're broke at 27 or 28 years old, you know, what does it really matter? And so from a very young age, luckily I was able to, you know, sort of get hooked up with your material. And I think it's helped me and certainly helped my clients be able to help navigate sort of the difficult waters that are coming. And this is actually next week I'm flying down to Acapulco to actually give a presentation that's going to be a little mini Tom Hegnan presentation to, believe it or not, a group of cryptocurrency millionaires. So even the cryptocurrency crowd will also be exposed to your work as well. So you're penetrating markets that you probably didn't even know that you'd be penetrating in the past. But everyone, you know, I would highly recommend checking out the books because these concepts are very important. But what I actually want to kind of start off with first is actually, you know, Tom, as an economist, there's very few, any of my listeners right now, you know, they're probably cringe when I say the word economist, because most economists, I don't, you know, it's like most politicians, like I roll my eyes if someone says they're an economist because they're almost always all wrong. And I don't really like listening to many of them. But, you know, I did hear one of your, I think it was a video that you put out a few months ago, you know, sort of like a 2019 primer. And I believe, can people get sign up for your newsletter on your website to get that email? Or is that just because I bought one of your books that I got that email? Or how can someone sign up for that?
No, they can sign up for my newsletter at tomhegnan.com. That video is on YouTube. So if you just Google Tom Hegnan economic commentary, I mean, there's from everywhere from 2012 to 2019 is on there.
Excellent. And one of the things that... you know, I made this comment. I remember when I first moved down to Arizona, we're both coming actually live from Arizona. Well, actually, it looks like you're probably traveling, but I know you do.
I'm in Omaha, 0 degrees here. So
where was that again? Sorry.
I'm in Omaha today. Yeah.
Okay. That's, yeah. So, you know, I'm sure you'll be happy to make it back to Arizona once, February is a great time to be here. But one of the things that I think we're really on the same page is where, I guess we're on the same page with a lot of things is I remember in 2011, a company that I was working for at the time actually got a hold of one of my emails and reprimanded me because I mentioned a comment that the Federal Reserve was absolutely trapped and there was basically no way that they could raise rates. And then, you know, they ended up, you know, intercepting the email and, you know, slapped me on the wrist and said, you know, hey, you're not allowed to speculate. The Fed's trapped between a rock and a hard place. And this was 2011. Because I remember it was as soon as I moved down here, which is why I know it was that date. But today, you know, it seems like, you know, yeah, the Fed had a few rate hikes just to, you know, they sort of trapped themselves into how they've been talking for years and years and years. But it really seems like, you know, that we're sort of at the end of the line of these, you know, yeah, we raised it a few times just to, you know, show this. But, you know, your thesis really is that, you know, because of all the debt that we have, that the Federal Reserve can't really raise rates, because if they do raise rates, then, you know, what's 5% of 20 trillion? It's $1 trillion in interest. And so it's for the retirement person that's retiring right now, there's a lot of implications that has. So I wonder if you can kind of like expound on your, you know, thesis of, you know, why the Federal Reserve can't raise rates because a lot of, and it really sort of conflicts with some other people that are out there. And I guess one thing I'd want, like to point out is one of my recent guests was David Morgan, who's a well-known silver investor. And, you know, himself and a lot of other people, like even like Jeffrey Gundelach, and even I guess you'd have even Jamie Dimon said that he thinks that the 10-year treasury could go up to 5%, or Gundelach thinks it could be 6%, not because the Fed is raising rates, but at a certain point the Fed might actually just lose control and somebody might say, hey, I don't want to, you know, lend a bankrupt, you know, U.S. government money for, you know, 3%. We've got to, you know, you got to charge a higher premium. So just sort of want to get your take on that, because I know that, you know, you're very well respected in this space. There's almost no economists that I even care about, especially, you know, the more famous they are, the less I care about them. So if you haven't heard of Tom, definitely check out his work. And just like to hear more about that.
Yeah, you put a lot in there. So let me try to unpack it. You know, what I say in my videos is that the Fed does not set interest rates. The Fed sets the overnight bank lending rate that affects about 0% of your clients. The market really sets interest rates. So even though the Federal Reserve raised interest rates six times, you know, the 30-year bond, even right now, is right at 3%. And that's telling you the market is telling the Fed to go pound sand, because in normal times, when the Fed raises rates 25 basis points, the 2-year will go up 25, the 10-year will go up 25, and the 30-year will go up 25. That's about normal, but these are not normal times. And so first thing is the Fed does not set interest rates. The market sets interest rates, and the market is telling you that interest rates are going to stay very low for a long time. If interest rates are going to go up to 3, 4, 5, 6, 7%, you'd see the 30-year bond moving the fastest, because the longer risk that you have, the more interest rates would have to go up. And so for the 10-year to hit 5 or 6%, the 30-year would have to be at 7 or 8 or 9%. And that's just not going to happen because of what you said. There's the three major reasons why interest rates are not going to go up. The debt, and you explained that if interest rates went up, the amount of interest on the debt would be 25 or 30% of our national budget, which would mean we'd have to slash Medicare, slash Social Security, slash military. And that's probably politically not feasible. So the other alternatives, they could raise taxes up significantly. Either one of those things would cause the economy to crash. And then what happens in time of the economy crash? They lower interest rates. So one way or another, interest rates are going to stay low just because of the debt. Then there's the deleveraging, the paying off of the debt, which is the raising taxes, cutting spending. That's putting deflationary pressures on the economy. And then the demographics, these 78 million baby boomers that are getting older, they're downsizing their houses, they're not spending money. Old people don't spend money anyway. So, and many of them haven't saved enough. So their spending is going to go way down from their working years. And the millennials are still up to their eyeballs in debt from student loans. So they're not going to be buying these big houses and doing all these things. So those are the major reasons. But now there's two new reasons. Number one, that QE, quantitative easing, has turned into QT, quantitative tightening. So now they're raising rates and they're unprinting money. They printed $4.5 trillion. Now they're unprinting it by letting those bonds roll off the books to the tune of $50 billion a month. So that's also a tightening. And then you've got these tariffs. We don't know how they're going to be settled in. But so all of this stuff is playing out that we are still fighting a deflationary risk, not an inflation. I do not see inflation for a long time. Now, as to your point of that people are not going to want to buy our bonds anymore. Well, look, China's way worse off than we are. Japan's way worse off than we are. Greece is way out worse than we are. Italy, Spain. We're going to know what's going to happen to our debt and our financial problems by watching what happens to them. We're still the cleanest shirt in the dirty laundry, okay? So, you know, they're going to be buying our bonds for a long time. We are still the world's reserve currency. I don't see that changing. And this whole thing about buying silver and gold for inflation, I don't buy it. If I was going to buy silver and gold, and I own some, I'd do it to protect me from deflation right now, because we're not going to probably see much inflation for the foreseeable future.
And when you say deflation, do you mean just in asset prices in general, like home prices going down, or do you see, or what are the big things that, because I mean, when you say inflation as well, I mean, they're, you know, people think of, you know, the price of maybe food or gas, but, you know, the inflation that we could have seen, you know, the past 10 years with all the quantitative easing and money printing, the inflation really could be in the financial assets, the stock market going up, just because, I mean, you mentioned Japan. I mean, Japan, essentially, they are underneath a complete fascist system right now, where everyone calls, you know, the president a fascist, yet they, you know, have keyboards where they type in ones and zeros and buy up, I think they own like something like 75% of their ETFs. ETF market, and yet nobody talks about that fascism that is actually going on. And I mean, I guess, do you see the Federal Reserve at some point maybe even buying stocks? Or I don't know, I'll probably hit you with a bunch of stuff again. But when it comes to, you know, how do you see the deflationary cycle playing out? Or do you think the Fed's going to be able to prevent the deflation? Or should they even prevent it?
Well, I mean, look what happened in 2008, 2009. Home prices crashed. You saw it in Arizona. I mean, you could buy homes for pennies on the dollar. And the high-end homes in Arizona, by the way, have never gone back up. So the $3 million homes that went down to $1 million, they're still selling for $1 million. They're not selling for $3 million anymore. The low end came back up. But there are many places where real estate is way overvalued. Parts of California, you know, Seattle. There's places, Toronto, there's places where it is really high. And that will come down at some point. As far as, you know, the government buying stocks, I'm going to stay out of that for right now because we'll talk about that if and when it ever happens. But we are looking at deflationary pressures. So I'm not saying that all the prices are going to go down. You know, I don't think lift tickets are going to go down anytime soon at Heavenly. I don't think healthcare costs are going to come down anytime, but asset prices will. Stocks and real estate at some point probably will. Now, what will happen? The Fed will probably print money again. See? So they never have let it really, really crash the way things need to crash. They put a soft landing in there. They start printing. They lower rates. So, I mean, we're going to still see government intervention, but at some point, the problems could become so big that there's going to have to be a big washout. And one of the people that I follow, and this may sound a little strange because he's wrong a lot, but he's right on the big stuff, and that's Harry Dent. And you ought to read some of Harry Dent's stuff. He's right on the macro issues. His problem is he tries to predict, oh, the market's going to go down 3,000 points next May. Well, who can predict that? That's stupid. He shouldn't do that. But the demographics, he's probably one of the smartest guys in the world on demographics, and that's playing a huge role in all of this.
And he's been a big influence as well. I've read The Demographic Cliff. I recently moved because actually I was one of the people that came here from upstate New York. So actually this is a Syracuse orange tie. So it was the only orange tie I could find. But I ended up moving here from Syracuse, New York. Everyone's like, oh, you're crazy. Why are you going to move to Arizona? Like, didn't you see their housing market just crash? I'm like, yeah, that's exactly why I'm moving here. So, you know, at the time I was probably 25, bought a $190,000 house, sold it for about $280,000, and then now actually I'm renting and hoping that I can maybe do that again. So, you know, a little bit of market timing going on there, but you know, it's what you're saying. I've got neighbors here where the development I'm living in right now, my street was built in 2006, like the worst time possible, and I've got neighbors who are still $100,000 underwater. And, you know, this is after 13 years. And so my wife's, you know, clamoring. I'm like, hey, we got to buy a house. We got to buy a house. You know, only poor people rent. I'm like, no, believe me, there's a lot of people who bought a house and became poor because they ended up buying a house. Now, I'm not predicting that what we saw in 2008 is necessarily going to happen again. But when we do have a lot of people from those areas you mentioned who are now moving in here, so you get a lot of people from California. Obviously, there's a lot of Canadians that are in moving down to Arizona if not only for the winter. Nobody wants to be over there. And it sort of seems like no matter if we are right or wrong on this, that really the Federal Reserve or the, you know, retirees are sort of, and the pensions are sort of damned if you do and damned if you don't. So, you know, let's take the, you know, the scenario where you're right and the rates never really go up and the 30 years, you know, stays at 3 or even goes down lower. Well, then what happens to all the pension funds that are, what? I mean, the average pension fund right now is, I forgot the exact number, but I think they're about 35% underfunded at the state and local government level. I mean, the private pensions aren't really doing too much better. A lot of them have assumed rates of about like 7, 8, 9%. I forgot what the CalPERS is, but I mean, that's probably, you know, 7 or 8%. And if you've got 40-50% of your portfolio sitting in bonds earning, you know, I guess last year, even a lot of bonds lost money. I think Jeffrey Gundelach's total return fund, I'm not making any recommendations because I am a financial advisor, just pointing out that it was, I think it was like the top performing major bond fund that's out there, but it was top performing at like 1.8%-ish. I don't have the exact stats in front of me. And so if you're getting, you know, even if you're in the best one and you've got 40-50% of your portfolio earning 1.8%, and then you've got advisory fees in there as well, that's basically half your portfolio sitting dead weight. And the other half of your portfolio is exposed to a lot of the retirement risks that are in your book. So it sort of seems like, you know, if in your standpoint, you know, they're sort of screwed. And then if the rate, and then let's say, you know, like a Jeffrey Gundlach is right, or the Fed loses control and the rates, let's say, do go up to 6 or 7%, which actually isn't even a crazy number. I mean, it is with the amount of debt we have a crazy number. Then the interest rate risk will then take all the bonds that the pension funds have are going to lose money because, and just for the viewers, when the price of when interest rates go up, the underlying values of the bonds go down, and there's an inverse relationship there. And then, you know, then they're going to have a very bad sequence of return risk on their bonds. And it just seems like there's pretty much no way out of this situation without a lot of pain. And I just kind of want to get your comment on that, where it seems like we're damned if we do, damned if we don't, no matter, you know, who's right or wrong on this situation.
Well, I am very concerned about pensions. And by the way, I'm going to get four of them because I got a military pension. I got three pensions from the insurance industry. And I am concerned about pensions. You know, they have been underfunded. And the problem with most pensions is that as people live longer, they didn't raise the retirement age. They didn't adjust any of their stuff. They still made all these big promises. So they overpromised and they're going to have to underdeliver. Now, does that mean that they'll default on them? I don't know. Does that mean that people's pensions will have to get cut 20, 30, 40%? I don't know. But I know the government can't bail them all out. So that is a definite concern. And so, you know, I normally tell people, if you're offered a pension, take it because it's better. But if you're with a very shaky company, or if you're not sure you're going to get that pension and they offer you a lump sum, you cannot take that lump sum and buy that exact pension out on the private market, because those are subsidized numbers in the pension. But if you're really concerned about it, you might want to take the lump sum and then put it someplace more secure. But I wouldn't just take the lump sum and spend it or anything. I would take it and then put it into another income for life if you can.
Yeah, and that's actually a great segue, because one of my clients right now are really going through that. I've never recommended that if somebody couldn't get more in, let's say, an immediate annuity than they could in their current pension. I've never recommended that they've gone ahead and gone that route. Except for this time, I have a client who, you know, without giving any names, he's, you know, with a company that I'm not. It's a company everybody's heard of. It's based out of Rochester, New York. It's not Kodak. So, you know, you could probably figure out which one I'm talking about. And I almost let it slip there. But, you know, and what happened was, I believe, you know, last year, I think the CEO put like $700-800 million of their cash into helping shore up the pension and got it to around like maybe 85% funded. Except the problem is, a lot of the, you know, the VCs and private equity and hedge funds that were now involved with this company, they were super pissed that, hey, you know, you just, that $800 million, that could have been, you know, that was our money that you took. And when, you know, because I forgot what the pension was, how much it was underfunded before that. And so now you're seeing this huge battle where, you know, it looks like, you know, the VCs and hedge fund guys that are in there are not going to be too keen on taking another, you know, $800 million anytime soon, assuming the company even has that in the future to shore up these pensions. And so he's looking at, you know, I was, you know, running the numbers, and he's looking at maybe taking a 20% haircut if you were to, you know, even put his money into a SPIA. And that's a single premium immediate annuity, which we'll get into a little bit later on. But the part of my point is, well, you know, if I can't even get this, you know, this amount of benefit out there in the private market, you know, how the hell is this company going to be promising this? And so I'm almost thinking, though, hey, if you can hit your goals and know you're going to be set, you know, it's better to take a 20% haircut now and be able to, you know, have, you know, the life that you want to live than get a 50% haircut or 75% haircut 10 years from now. So, you know, so there's sort of almost a perfect segue into that. So I've really been wrestling, because it's not a company that, I mean, I wouldn't want to stake, you know, 30 years of my retirement on this particular company. And so, you know, I'm sort of conflicted as a financial advisor. I'm like, well, you know, personally, I would probably take the haircut now, know that I'm going to be in this annuity. So can you maybe talk about a little bit about the income, the longevity credits of how immediate annuities work, and how, you know, in the private market, they can't really match that because, you know, they aren't selling life insurance, which counteracts the annuities. And so I was wondering if you could get into that for my listeners.
You know, a pension, all a pension is a lifetime income annuity. That's all it is. So then people don't really understand, well, why would you be concerned about a pension, but you wouldn't be concerned about the same, you know, income annuity from an insurance company? And you brought up the reason why. The insurance company sells both life insurance and annuities. So if people live longer, they got to pay more on their annuities, but they're going to pay fewer death claims, or they're going to have the money longer to invest. So they're on both sides of the risk. If there's some natural disaster and a bunch of people die, they got to pay more death claims, but they're not going to be paying as much income annuity. So that's why an insurance company has a natural hedge against longevity. Whereas with a pension, they only sell pensions. And as people live longer, they got to pay more and more and more and more and more and more. And that's why these pensions are in trouble, because as people were living longer, they were not adjusting their pension rates. They should not have been telling people, oh, you work for 30 years, you get a full pension, you know, full. They couldn't afford that. No insurance company in the world could do that. And so whereas insurance companies would set their rates every 3 or 4 or 5 years and adjust it for life expectancy, the pensions never did. That's why you can't match the pension rate with an insurance company payout, because they were crazy when they made those assumptions. And the insurance companies are a little smarter than that. And so, you know, as far as whether the client should do that or not, I would put that 100% up to the client. I would not push them one way or another. I'd probably explain, here's this, let them decide. But I think more and more people are going to have to be faced with that decision.
Yeah, no, and that's sort of what we've done. Is I didn't want to, you know, I'm like, here's, you know, the, you know, just a complete, you know, deluge of information of, you know, a lot of it is, you know, sort of, you know, stems from your work as well. And I wish I sort of brought this up a little bit earlier, because you had a perfect segue into this, because I actually did have demographics in some of the notes of what I wanted to talk about today, just sort of comparing, you know, today to 2008. And so really sort of the crux, I guess, of Harry Dent's work from the demographic cliff is that the average person spends the most amount of money in their lifetime at age 46. The baby boomers boom started in 1946. If you add 46 years to that, you get 1992. You know, that's when Clinton was coming into office. And so there's a lot of positive, you know, tailwinds that the, you know, that they had in the 90s going on with the economy. Well, now the baby boomers started, once you start entering retirement, you realize, hey, we didn't save enough money. We've got to downsize. You know, we can't, you know, live as large as we once did. And now you're not spending as much money. And so now in 2008, the baby boomers were just turning, I think they were turning like 62 years old. So they were, you know, most of them were not actively drawing on their pensions. They weren't actively drawing on their IRAs, 401ks. Now, almost 11 years later, now let's say they're 72, 73 years old. Now they're actually forced to take money out of their IRAs and 401ks through the required minimum distributions. They're pulling on pensions, pulling on Social Security. And so next time this really goes, you know, the pensions are not going to have another 10 years to go ride this out. And so, you know, I just wanted to, you know, see if you could touch on, you know, sequence of return risk and how that is really going to, you know, in my opinion, could absolutely wallop these pensions, where, you know, it's one thing that, yeah, you guys got out of Dodge in 2008. And the fact that you're still, you know, on the state and local government, 35% underfunded after a 10-year bull run, you know, it's just, you know, it seems like this is just, you know, a perfect storm that's all going to be coming together at some point, certainly in my lifetime.
Yeah, I mean, I've written about all of this in the books. I mean, this pension is going to be a crisis. Now, as far as sequence of returns risk, most people don't understand it. So the way I explain it is this way: the market has averaged over 12% a year since 1924. But if you're retired and you have money in the market, you can't take out 12% a year. You can't take out 8% a year. You can't take out 6% a year. You can't even take out 4% a year. Morningstar says the safe withdrawal rate is 2.8% per year. Now, people don't understand that. If the market has averaged 12, how come I'm stuck only taking out 2.8? They don't understand it. But here's why. Because if you retire, and the first 3 years of your retirement, the market goes down, down, down. As the market's going down, you have to liquidate more and more and more stock for your income. Because let's say you're taking out 2,000 a month or 3,000 a month. Well, that might've been 10 shares before, but now it's 20 shares. And so you have to keep liquidating more and more and more. And then when the market goes back up, none of that can grow back. And then when the market goes down, you take out more and more and more, none of that can grow back. And so it doesn't take many years before the portfolio goes into a death spiral. What's so important is that you have a guaranteed source of income. And what the PhDs who study retirement say is you should have enough guaranteed lifetime income to cover your basic living expenses. Social Security counts, pension somewhat counts, but then lifetime income annuities. And so the research all shows that retirees should have guaranteed income to at least cover their basic living expenses. And then if the market's going up and down, they can just let that roll. They don't have to liquidate to you know, do their normal living expenses. So the simplest way for the average person to do it, if they're 60% stock and 40% bonds, is to simply liquidate the bond portfolio, put that into an income annuity. It'll lower the risk and increase returns to your portfolio right out the gate. It's a great bond substitute, and it will give you more peace of mind. And then you can ride the ups and downs of the market. Now, I don't know that I'd have 60% of my money in the market, maybe with some guarantees in it. And you can do that with insurance products and things like that. But that's what I would say on the sequence of returns. People don't understand it. It's going to wipe out the retirements of tens of millions of baby boomers.
No, and that's actually one of the main things I'm going to be talking about when I'm down in Acapulco, talking to all the Bitcoin guys and girls. And I've got my camera right in front of my screen, so I'm trying to look at something to be able to share it. But, you know, this is sort of what Tom was talking about, where, you know, it shows someone that had three, and we didn't even prep this beforehand. So, you know, it shows someone that had three bad years of retirement when they got into retirement. And then they had seven, you know, decent years or good years. And then we see someone that had, you know, the exact inverse of that. They had seven good years and then three bad years, and they both averaged the exact same amount, and they were both taking out $50,000 a year. They both earned, I believe on here it only showed 5.1%, so they were earning more than the average, more than what they were even pulling out. And it shows that investor A, after 10 years, was left with $630,000, and investor B had over $1 million, but they both averaged the same thing. And actually the craziest one of these of all, and this was from a Prudential slide. And I feel like some of the stuff they probably even ripped off like your work. And, you know, so I've seen, you know, a lot of people talking about sequence of return risk. And what you see is you see somebody, you know, they started off with $500,000, withdrawing 4.05%. They had a 60-40 portfolio, rebalanced annually. And it showed that somebody who retired in April of 1970, after 30 years, had about, you know, let's call it $2.6 million, just eyeballing it. The person that retired a year before that had about $500,000-$600,000 after 30 years left. And the person that retired just 4 months before that person ran out of money after 29 years. And that's, when it comes to sequence of return risk, I feel like that's, you know, the creme de la creme example of why people need to be, you know, worried about this. Because, you know, you listen to CNBC and it's always, you know, this averages that, no one ever talks about sequence of return risk. And it's really something that that people need to be aware of, especially when you're 10 years into this bull market. And I see people, you know, I almost feel like they've been lulled to sleep of, you know, it's been so long since things have gone down. And, you know, we just watched the State of the Union and we've been told it's the greatest economy in the history of the world, even though the Fed can't raise rates, you know, again. So, you know, you think if it's the greatest economy ever, you'd at least be able to have a Fed funds rates above, you know, whatever it is now, like 2.25%. But no, thank you for breaking that down as well. I'm trying to see what the next things you wanted to discuss here were. And that the concept that you were talking about with having 40% into annuities, that was something that, you know, before I even discovered you, I had sort of figured that out, because I was thinking, you know, if you're looking for stability, well, the bonds aren't really that stable if, you know, in the event that interest rates do go up. If you're looking for income, well, the bonds are almost providing no income as well. So, you know, what I want to do is I want to send you a little animation that I made that I actually never released, because I had these guys and he said he was down in Tempe, but he was really in India. And, you know, it figures like the one time I used somebody here and, you know, they were using things where I was supposed to illustrate $1 million, but they accidentally put like the decimal in the wrong place. And we kept going back and forth. And it was 99.9% done. I just got busy and shelved it. And I just finished it, but I've never released it. And so I want to, it's the mathematical proof of how all this stuff works. Because annuities get a bad rap, let's just face it. I mean, it's sort of like if you talk about cryptocurrency, it gets a pretty bad rap. People just want to stay like an arm's length distance from it, because you've got a lot of, you know, the famous names that are out there, whether it's, you know, Susie Orman, which she's even come around, you know, another guy, I know his name rhymes with Len Wisher, you know, who's always out there bad mouthing, like, hey, go write to us and we'll give you your top 20 reasons of why you shouldn't own an annuity. And, you know, and I think rightly so, people should be skeptical of annuities, because there's lots of, I would say, bad annuity salesmen that are out there. And I've seen situations where I had a prospect who, you know, the lady didn't have like a pot to piss in, her mom passed away, and the advisor took, you know, all like $500,000 she inherited and put it all in an investment only VA that had no living benefits, had no guaranteed income, had no anything, and now all of her money was locked up. And that same week, I'd actually proposed that same product for another client who was a doctor. She had already, you know, maxed out all of her 401ks, IRAs. She, you know, had a trust, had 6 months emergency reserves. And so, you know, that made sense for her. But then I wanted to punch the other guy in the face who sold, you know, this lady, this product. And so, you know, people should be wary of a lot of these annuities, but can you maybe speak to, you know, sort of the counter argument to, you know, the guys out there who are saying, you know, all annuities are scams, or you shouldn't even touch them, or, you know, you should just invest your money with us because we know better. So what would you have to say to, you know, I guess the haters that are out there when it comes to annuities?
Oh, I've written articles, you know, explaining why Ken Fisher really loves annuities and why you should too. But look, I don't care what they say. What I care about is the research, the math and the science, okay? Everything I do is based on math and science and economics. It's not based on opinion. So I don't care what people's opinions are, but I can prove to anybody who doesn't like and we're talking mainly income annuities for retirement. I mean, there are other annuities, but for you're not gonna read much negative on income annuities. The stuff you read on, the negative stuff is more on the variables or on the indexed products of the past. Maybe I think all of them are getting a lot better now, but the income annuities need to be an essential part of a retirement plan. And if there's any doubter out there, I'll give you a chance to prove me wrong. I do this in live events all the time. If you don't believe in annuities, then here's how you can prove me wrong. You put together the portfolio you think I cannot beat. Yeah, you're going to put all the good stocks in there. Yeah, you put that portfolio together. I'm going to reach into your portfolio. I'm going to remove some of the bonds. I'm going to replace those bonds with an income annuity. You know what that'll do to every single one of your portfolios? It'll lower the risk and increase the returns. You see, because the way that an income annuity functions inside of a portfolio, it functions like a AAA rated bond with a CCC rated yield with zero standard deviation. So if you think about it, if you had a portfolio and you replace some of the bonds with a AAA rated bond with a CCC rated yield with zero standard deviation, what would that do to the portfolio? It would lower the risk and increase returns every single time. So I base everything I do on math and science, the research of hundreds of PhDs around the world. You're not going to find a PhD writing a white paper that say annuities are bad. How else can you take longevity risk off the table? How else can you have peace of mind and happiness in retirement? See, what people don't understand is happiness in retirement is tied almost 100% to guaranteed lifetime income, not assets. Who are the most miserable people you know in retirement? They're loaded. They got assets out the wazoo, but they're losing money in oil. They're losing money in the market. They're losing money in Bitcoin. These people are miserable. Think about the happiest people in retirement. Retired military, retired government, retired teacher. They're people with pensions. They've got guaranteed lifetime income. And so you're going to be happier. You're going to be more successful. And guess what? The research shows you're likely to live longer. There have been now numerous articles out there that say people with guaranteed income tend to live longer. And the more guaranteed income you have, the longer you tend to live. So that's what I care about. I do not care about what these talking heads say. They're wrong. I can prove it mathematically and scientifically.
Yeah, no, thank you. Thank you for that. I buy into that, you know, 100%. And you do see, you know, some financial advisors who also, I think, shy away from it because, you know, they take a look at an income annuity and they think, okay, well, you know, I'm going to get paid, you know, 3-4% once and then never get paid again versus, you know, I put my money with, you know, the other person we mentioned and, you know, I'll collect, you know, 1.5% fee, you know, their own annuity, you know, for the rest of their life. And unfortunately, the last broker dealer I was with, I had a whole like gigantic article I was going to write, you know, detailing all the math and they wouldn't approve it, but I'm not with them anymore. And I should probably, re-put that out there. But even that person, I think, had a mutual fund that came out right around the time of the financial crisis where they had a very, very bad sequence of return where like year one, they were down 60% because they came out with it in 2007. And so if you followed that person's advice and had all your money in their fund, you would have basically been devastated had you needed the money, which is probably why that fund doesn't exist anymore. So, you know, it's almost like the proof is in the pudding in the own person's fund. I mean, so that's, you know, I think that that's, you know, pretty much one of the best retorts to that. But people do have the right to be skeptical. I mean, I do advise a lot of people in the cryptocurrency space, but with that said, 99.999% of the cryptocurrencies that are out there are complete scams. There's tons of hucksters out there, tons of fraudsters, and people shouldn't be putting money they don't have to invest in it to begin with. But I think it's important that those people also, you know, they got walloped by sequence of return risk. And last year when I gave the presentation, it was on how you guys could take your money. So let's say, hey, you put in $1,000 and now you've got $15 million. Well, if you, you know, if your dream was to live off of, you know, $100,000 a year, why don't you take a little bit off the table, boom, get your $100,000 a year. And if you want to go play with the house's money, go do it. And so, you know, it wasn't, you know, a super popular message to be talking about last year, but this year they doubled the amount of time I get to speak, and I'm going to be presenting a lot of on your concepts, and we'll be telling people that they can go and watch this interview as well. So they'll be exposed to your work. So I'm sure you probably never thought that you'd be, you know, sort of exposed to the cryptocurrency crowd, but you know, I'm bringing the message of Tom Hegna.
Just so you know, I published something on cryptocurrency last year, and here's what I said. I have no problem if somebody wants to put 1% of their portfolio in crypto, because you don't buy crypto because it's a stable thing that you're going to live off of. You buy it because it could be a home run, right? You could buy it, you could put $1,000 in, it can turn into $1 million. That it's one of the few places where that could happen. But I said, I wouldn't put any more than 1% of my portfolio in there. It's a very speculative place. But that's just, you know, I'm not totally against crypto. I'm just against having 60% of your money in crypto.
Yeah. And I see you in the financial industry, like how it's going to change things. Cause in the future, what you're going to have is instead of buying, you know, the S&P 500 index fund, you're probably going to buy. And I think even Michael Kitsis has talked about this, but it wasn't in the context of cryptocurrencies. It was in the, I forgot what the actual name of what he called it was, but kind of the skip to the end is you're going to get through the blockchain technology. You're going to be able to trade a stock. And instead of buying the S&P 500, you'll buy all 500 stocks. And in that way, you'll have different tax loss selling benefits where you can then sell out the individual, maybe 20% of the S&P that lost money that year, and to be able to you know, reclaim those losses for future, to offset future gains. And right now, I mean, it would cost like, I don't know, even at $5 a trade would cost you $2,500 to make that trade. So, you know, almost nobody's doing it unless some of the rich guys over in Omaha, like Warren Buffett and, you know, a few other people. But with cryptocurrency, I see this where it could cost almost next to nothing to be able to make this trade and skip a lot of middlemen and make that transaction just happen very, very quickly. And there's people that are working on that. T0 is a project that was just launched by the Overstock.com guy, Patrick Byrne. I mean, he's a, you know, I think a Stanford PhD in math. So, I mean, also a pretty smart guy. And you had mentioned standard deviations and how the adding income annuities can actually lower the standard deviation of risk. Well, actually, it's zero inside of that product. Well, there was another researcher called Tom Lee of Fundstrat, where he showed if someone had 2.5%, instead of having a 60-40 portfolio, they put 2% in Bitcoin, the other 58% in stocks and 40% in bonds. I mean, it would have been better if they put 40% in income annuity, but it actually showed that the standard deviation actually went down because it was an uncorrelated asset. Now that only works to a certain amount, and they found that right around like 5% is where it started deviating. And you know, it's such a short time span that it really depends what, I guess, month or year you're looking at, and sort of, it went off the rail. I didn't have that in my notes to talk about today, but you'd mentioned that a lot of the top experts, you know, guys like Wade, I forgot how to pronounce his last name, like Wade Fow, one of the, you know, the top gurus. I used to be with Waddell and Reed, and I can't remember the guy's name. It was Neil. He was like one of our top planning gurus, Neil something. Anyways, he was, you know, sort of like the guy, and he was talking about, hey, what I'm going to do is I'm going to take, you know, the amount of money I want to live off of, I'm going to put that in immediate income annuity, and then I'm going to, you know, basically, you know, ride the rest. And I've heard that story from even like one of the top RVPs. And these are guys that work for, at the time, I would call it like a mutual fund company or investment companies. And even they're doing that. But it seems like when it goes down to the average advisor level at my level, that, you know, a lot of them have, you know, they, you know, even like myself early on, you know, there are cases to make, I think, for variable annuities. I don't have a 7 anymore, so I can't even sell them. And you had mentioned that the index annuities have gotten a lot better. I mean, I used to treat those how I would treat the other cryptos outside of Bitcoin as basically scams. But they've gotten a lot better, where the index annuities have gotten, you know, tremendously better. I would never even look at them or touch them.
And now they have income riders, and some of the income riders are higher than on some of the VAs. So they've gotten a lot better lately, and you're going to see a lot more companies that shied away from them in the past, putting them in their portfolio. You're already seeing it. But I would just say this. I own 11 annuities. Now, if they were bad products and you think I'm a somewhat smart guy, I would not have 11 of them. They were bad, okay? And here's why I have them. I have enough money to retire. Like, if I want to retire right now, I could retire. what is the worst thing I could do? What is the absolute worst thing I could do if I have money? Lose it. If you lose money right before or right after retirement, it devastates your entire retirement. The dumbest, stupidest thing I could do would be to lose my money right before I retire. And so I put guarantees on my stuff. And so I know for the rest of my life, my wife and I are going to have enough income to live very comfortably. Okay. And I do have a little bit of money in the market, but even that money in the market, I put into a VA where I had a guarantee that if the market went down, because we're talking, there's a lot of bad stuff that could happen out there. I mean, we talked about this. There's terrible stuff that could happen. If that happens, I'm still protected to some level, you know? And so to me, that's important. And I would tell people who have money, the worst thing you can do, the very worst thing you could do is lose it. That's the worst thing you could do.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, it's, you know, there's people who never had money. It's almost even worse if you had it and then you lost it.
Oh.
And so you see another people, how they want to keep their money, you know, quote unquote safe, is they want to keep all their money in the bank. And so I coined a phrase, you know, in 2008, you know, that's, you know, going broke safely. If you're just keeping all of your money, if you're just keeping all of your money in the bank. But yeah, I mean, I wanted to see if you could also maybe talk about the, you know, there was an analogy you had in one of your books, and it's been years since I last listened to your audiobook, but I remember you had an analogy that stuck with me about, you know, the clients or the couple that was running out of gas and, you know, on a drive. And I just want to see if you could maybe give that analogy for our listeners today.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's this family from Boston that had never been to the desert before. They'd never seen a cactus or a coyote. So they booked a family vacation to Death Valley, and they're going to go through Death Valley, through Nevada into Arizona. And they booked it for the middle of July. When they landed, it was 127 degrees. Now that's so hot, you can fry eggs on the pavement, but it was okay. They had a big old Lincoln Continental with ice cold air conditioning, and they start their drive. And at first it was, you know, sand dunes everywhere. There were cactus, lizards everywhere, tarantulas. There's a coyote, a rattlesnake, and a rabbit. They'd never seen it before. They were having the time of their lives. Well, as the day went along, somebody noticed the gas gauge was now almost on E, and the next town was over 100 miles away. Well, now panic set in. The air conditioner comes off, the windows come down, the heat of the day pours in, they start sweating. Well, now you know what happens. They start fighting and arguing. How could you be so stupid not to fill the tank before we go across Death Valley? How fast should we drive? One guy said, oh, it looks pretty flat. I'd probably speed her up to 100, 110. We could probably coast for 5 or 6 miles. The other guy says, no, we need to slow it down. We need to save fuel. But here they were, fighting, arguing, miserable. All their eyes were on the gas gauges, went down, down, down. And they knew they were going to run out. They just didn't know when. See, that's the same as running out of gas in the desert. It's the same as running out of money in retirement. And everybody thinks that the bad thing about running out of money in retirement is the day you run out. That's not true. It's all those years when you know you're going to run out. You're watching your account and it's going down, down, down. And you know you're going to run out. You just don't know when. And that's why, if you would at least cover your basic living expenses in retirement with guaranteed lifetime income, that's just like having a quarter tank of gas guaranteed all the way across Death Valley. I have never, ever said somebody should put all of their money in annuity. Never have I said that. But a portion, and for the average person, that's anywhere from about 20% to 40% of their portfolio. That would be average. I have more than that because I don't just want my paychecks guaranteed. I want my playchecks guaranteed because I don't just want to survive in retirement. I want to actually have fun in retirement.
No, yeah. And thank you for that analogy. And actually, I have almost run out of gas driving from Phoenix to Vegas before. And believe me, it was not a, you know, we stopped to go to get gas, but before we went to get gas, we ended up, I don't know if you've made the drive from Phoenix to Vegas before. There's, you know, very few places to stop. And I don't know where we're at, like Kingman or something. I ended up going to get, you know, like the Wendy's there first, and then ended up forgetting to get the gas. And next thing you know, it was, you know, keeping our fingers crossed, but I was not a very fun guy for the remainder of that trip. And I was borrowing my wife's car too. And the whole time before I left, she's like, don't do anything stupid or get, and then yeah, here I am. And I almost run out of gas before I even get to Vegas. So, you know, that's something that I can certainly relate with, but you know, it's a lot worse. You know, running out of gas is one thing, but running out of money in retirement, that's a whole other can of worms. And I think the last thing I just want to bring up, and I probably should have mentioned this a little bit earlier, because as we're segueing into this, but you know, we talked about, you know, income annuities, and you know, I think that that's great for someone that's a year or two away from retirement, but because of some of the you know, the benefits you get, and especially some of the index annuities that, you know, roll up, you know, 10% a year guaranteed and have pretty favorable, you know, withdrawals and have no caps. And again, I don't even have right now, I'm not even licensed with a company. So I will, you know, I recently became, you know, fee only, but then I'm starting to think, you know what, just because I'm fee only, you know, I'm not really doing people a service by being fee only, because a lot of them would be better served having some of these products. So I'm, you know, this would be a short stint of being fee only, and now I'm looking at getting all reappointed, and, you know, because I just see how it can benefit people. But what I've seen is that if you have people, someone that was maybe 10 years away from retirement, you know, some of these other products may be a better fit than the actual income annuity. Whereas if you're, you know, a year or two away, then there's pretty much nothing that can beat the income annuity. And is that something where you agree with, or is it always, you know, an immediate annuity or always a deferred?
Oh, no. I mean, look, I own 11 annuities. I'm not getting income from any of them right now. So I buy deferred income annuities. I own variable annuities, and I own a few index annuities. So I've got, but I don't have any SPIAs because I'm too young. You know, SPIAs are single premium immediate annuities. It's really 65 and above typically, or if you want to draw income immediately. But I've got income annuities that are set to start at age 60, age 62, age 65, age 67, because I want to have increasing income for the rest of my life. And then I've got other ones that I can turn on whenever I want. If I need more, I can turn them on, or I can make withdrawals. So I've got liquidity, I've got flexibility, but I've got a lot of guaranteed income.
So sort of like you created like your own like bond ladder, but with annuities. So and I'm sure it's probably going to outperform, you know, all those.
It'll outperform any bond ladder out there. And, you know, and if you've ever gone to, you know, Curtis Cloak, he's another guy that's out there, and he runs Thrive University. And if you've ever gone to watch him, he will show you mathematically that a DIA, a deferred income annuity, will likely outperform a 60-40 portfolio through your whole retirement. So if that's true, and watching him, I believe it is true, why would I want to have my money at risk if I can do as good or better? Even what if I was close to as good without the risk? That's why I've chosen to do it, because it doesn't make sense to me, especially with all the stuff we're talking about, the debt, the government. Look, the government can't even get together on anything anymore. We're kind of in a scary time right now.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to get you in trouble mention any politics or anything, but it's just amazing. It's amazing the things. I mean, I'm a, you know, more of a leave me aloneist. If I don't want to tell you what to do, you don't tell me what to do. But at the same point, you know, I see that one side is definitely trying to tell me what to do more than the other side. And, you know, but anyways, I don't want to get you too much in trouble with that. I haven't heard of Curtis Cloak before. So is it with a K or with a C?
Curtis with a, and Cloak with a C, C-L-O-K-E.
Okay, and what I'll do is that animation that I talked about that I've not released and made it, you know, basically 99% of that made 2 years ago, and then just got busy doing other things and a whole big story. But I'll actually attach that to the end of this interview, and you know, I'd be honored if I could get your feedback on that, because I use the math to break it down. I mean, I got the CFP when I was 25 years old and sort of a big math nerd guy, and you know, I looked at the numbers, and I mean, the numbers are very telling that there's no way around it. There's no, I mean, just mathematically speaking, you know. But the reason I wanted to mention, you know, the other types of annuities out there is because in case I've got clients who, you know, are listening to this and then they realize, well, hey, you know, how come I'm not in one of those single premium immediate annuities? I mean, I didn't even know that you weren't in them yourself. And my justification was, well, unless you're, you know, really close to retirement, you probably don't need that, but it would still do better than being in a bond, at least in my opinion. And I guess the other knock on that would be people are talking about the different high fees that annuities have. And so maybe could you kind of get into, you know, the fee structure of immediate annuities and how, you know, really it's more of a spread product.
Yeah. And an immediate annuity, so a SPIA or a DIA, is not a fee product. There's not a fee. It's a spread product. It's on the insurance company. They got to make money. So there's no annual fee. There's no upfront fee. There's a one-time policy fee of about $300, but that's already in the payment. So if you're guaranteed $1,000 a month for the rest of your life, that's what you're going to get. There's no fee on there. Variable annuities have fees. Some indexed annuity riders have fees, but they're optional. So the only time you have to really get involved in fees and annuities is in the variable annuity space. And then remember, the reason they have fees is because they have guarantees. It all comes down to this. When it comes to risk, there are only three things you can do with risk. Number one, you can retain the risk, which means you're naked in the market. You go up and down with the market. You retain the risk. Or you can avoid the risk and go into a bank account or a money market fund that's paying 1% or 2%. Or you can transfer the risk. You transfer the downside risk of the market to an insurance company that's been in business for 100 years, and they're going to be in business for 100 years. They can weather the ups and downs. If it stays down for 10 years, it's not going to ruin their balance sheet, but it will certainly ruin your retirement. And so you transfer the risk to an insurance company for a fee. And so what you have to weigh out is the guarantee worth the fee? That's the decision.
And then it is important that everybody has, a trusted advisor that they can talk to. Because as we mentioned before, I mean, there's a lot of, hucksters out there, a lot of people who are, just maybe have one product and it's the old, adage that goes, if all you have is a hammer, everything you see is a nail. So, if people think, oh, well, this guy's going to get 3 or 4%. Well, believe me, it might cost you a lot more than 3 or 4%. If you do it on your own and you're not, well-versed in these products, because it is a absolute minefield of just information when it comes to annuities and how complex they can be. I mean, it is, just a ridiculously complex, but it doesn't have to be. When it comes to the immediate annuity, very, very easy to understand. I'll have the animation linked after this. We definitely appreciate Tom's time today. He's a very, very highly sought after speaker. I know that the company that I used to work for, or both of them, I think I probably had Tom speak, and he charges quite a bit. It's like probably over $10,000 to get him to speak. So I don't want to take up too much of his time today, but it's definitely worth it. And for any advisors who happen to be listening to this, I would highly recommend the Matt Retirement Income Masters, Secrets of the Pros. Highly, highly recommend that. And so what I'll do right now is I'm going to share the screen over to the Amazon link over here. And so here you can find Tom's books. He's even got the Canadian version of Paychecks and Playchecks, because I know they've got some different things going on over there when it comes to like their RRSP programs. And we definitely thank Tom for being here. He's an absolute retirement income guru. He's the guy. And so, I just wanted to make sure that, since we had a mutual connection and in person, I wanted to make sure, and hey, I'll reach out to Tom, see, if he'll come on the program today, because I think that you really are, the guru's guru on this stuff. And we really appreciate your time today.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So for everyone who stuck around to the end, I'm sure you got a lot out of the episode. It was great, hearing Tom's, not only his retirement advice, but different perspectives that he has in the world and on the economy. So now sit tight. We're going to have a quick commercial. And then after that, we're going to premiere, had the debut of the animation that I had made about 2 years ago. And it was about 99% of the way there. And then we had some language barrier issues with the guy that was making it, even though the guy said that he was from Phoenix. And anyways, I just went ahead and made the edits myself. And this video is probably, the absolute, from a mathematical standpoint, proves the case why annuities are important. But again, this subject is riddled with people that basically are just glorified salesmen that are just pushing a product that they don't actually do any planning. And I've seen time and time again, people are in the wrong types of annuities, time and time again. People are in them that shouldn't even be in them. And there's definitely is a reason why this industry does have a black eye when it comes to the word annuity. However, if you are in your 60s or you're close to retirement or you are already retired and you have bonds in your portfolio, I'm going to mathematically prove how an income-based annuity can actually do wonders for your portfolio, especially when compared to bonds. So look out for the commercial, and then we'll have the debut of the animation.
Thank you for listening to the show. One of the ways you can help support the show is by seeing if it makes sense to invest with myself. I'm a certified financial planner with Innovative Advisory Group, LLC. Innovative specializes in self-directed IRAs where you can invest into virtually anything, including virtual assets and cryptocurrencies inside your retirement accounts. And get this, you can actually hold on to the private key. And that's something that nobody else is doing, at least with the help of an advisor. We also run protective growth portfolios where you invest a small amount of your portfolio into put options, and that basically helps protect the rest of the portfolio. Not very many people are familiar with put options, but a lot of people are familiar with homeowners insurance, and it works in a very similar fashion. So essentially what you're doing is using a very, very small percentage of the value of the home to protect the rest of the home. And if the house doesn't burn down or there isn't a major catastrophe, then you're basically out on the cost of the insurance. Flip side, if your house ends up burning down, well, then you build your house back. And that's really the same thing that's going on here. So if the market ends up tanking and we know the most that you can possibly lose on your investment, and honestly, if the market were to go down 60, 70%, and you're only down single digits potentially, then that's an amazing buying opportunity. Lord Nathan Rothschild said it best, that the best time to invest is when there's blood in the streets. But if your money goes down with everybody else's, then you're not able to take advantage of the next crisis. And also, if you're just camping out in cash or in bonds, making next to nothing, you could be going broke safely for a very long time. And then you've got to know when to time the market. And that's something that basically nobody can do. Now, on the flip side, if I'm wrong in all this and the market keeps going higher, or the Federal Reserve comes out, or the European Central Bank comes out and says, hey, we're going to print a whole bunch more money, and the market goes to infinity, well, then you'll go up to infinity minus the cost of that put option. So I think that this is a great strategy that you definitely want to learn more about. I mean, just given the craziness that's going on right now, if you're heavy into cash right now, heavy into bonds, or even heavy into stocks, especially if you're close to actually needing those funds for retirement, or just needing those funds in general, maybe for a big project, or maybe you work on a crypto and you raised a whole bunch of money, that this is something that we can help protect yourself and protect your loved ones. And there's nothing you have to lose by scheduling a free consultation with us. And actually, there's a chance you could lose a lot by not talking with us in general. If you go and click on our website in the upper right-hand corner, there's a Work with Tim button up there. You can see all of our plans, ways we work with our clients. Pricing can all be found there. And given that I'm sort of out there on a lot of different political issues, I know that I'm not going to be for everybody. You know, that's sort of my way of qualifying you, not the other way around. But, you know, I'm fine. I'm not trying to have all six billion people out there like me. And I'm here to really, at the end of the day, to tell the truth and to make money, not necessarily make friends. So head over to thelibertyadvisor.com and let's see what we can do for you. Thank you.
If you are thinking of retiring soon or already retired, this is a must-see presentation. Today, we are going to rethink everything you thought you knew about retirement. Meet Bob and Susie Smith. The Smiths are both 62 and would like to retire when they are 65, and they have a $1 million portfolio. Using the 4% rule of thumb with a traditional 60-40 portfolio, the Smiths could expect $40,000 of retirement income per year. Of course, this would be non-guaranteed and assuming no growth between now and the time they retired. And just so you know, a 60-40 portfolio is a common rule of thumb for retirees, which states 60% of their portfolio will be in stocks and the remaining 40% in bonds. This is not making a judgment on whether this is right or wrong, only pointing out what a typical retiree's portfolio might look like. If suitable, what if we invested the 40% of their portfolio that was in bonds in a guaranteed income product instead? Typically, this will be an annuity. However, an investor's unique financial situation and other factors we'll address in a minute will dictate which type of product will have the highest amount of guaranteed income. Okay, so let's substitute the 40% of their portfolio that was in bonds in this hypothetical scenario with an annuity. The simplest type of annuity to illustrate and understand is the immediate annuity. This is simply where you give an insurance company a lump sum of money, and in return, they give you a guaranteed paycheck for life. If you start your income stream more than 1 year out in the future, then what you're looking for is known as a deferred immediate annuity, or DIA. Now, one hang-up people have about immediate annuities are, what happens to my money if I die? Without getting into all the nuances of every option available, I want to focus on the most common contract written today, which is life with cash refund. In this case, if the Smiths were to invest $400,000 into a cash refund annuity, and let's say get hit by a bus the next day, then their heirs would inherit the entire $400,000. Now, if the Smiths were to hypothetically withdraw, let's say $100,000 and then get hit by a bus, then their heirs would inherit the $300,000 difference. Now, I wanna make one point very clear. By no means are we saying this is the best type of annuity out there, or this product is suitable for everyone. The type of annuity most suitable for the investor will depend on the investor's liquidity needs, legacy concerns, risk tolerance, differences in ages between the significant others, amongst many other important considerations. The bottom line is, get a hold of myself or my team, and we can put your information through our proprietary calculators and help you determine what the most suitable type of annuity for you and your family is. Now, ideally, this would be done after a financial plan, but for the interest of this presentation, we won't get into that commercial now. Okay, so where do we come up with the $23,712? In order to figure out this number, the first thing we did was go to immediateannuities.com. Please note, we have no affiliation with this website whatsoever. Immediateannuities.com is a great place to get an approximate amount of income of how much you could expect from annuity. Again, immediate annuities are the easiest type of annuity to understand, and usually their payouts will be close to what you could expect from other classes of annuities, and this will also make it so you can play along at home as well. Again, we want to focus on the life with cash refund option. Using this option, the annuity would pay out so long as either of the Smiths are alive. Using the 4% rule for the 60% of our investor's portfolio that was in stocks, 4% of $600,000 would give you $24,000 of income. So if we take the 60% of their portfolio in stocks, that would give us a non-guaranteed $24,000 per year, and combine it with the 40% of their portfolio that would now be allocated to a joint annuity, which would give them $23,712 of guaranteed income for life, the Smiths could now expect $47,712 in hypothetical retirement income underneath this scenario. Now, another way of looking at things, if Bob and Susie still wanted to strive for $40,000 a year in income, now they would only need to pull $16,288 from the 60% of their portfolio that was in stocks, or 2.71%. This would put a lot less stress on their portfolio and greatly decrease their withdrawal rate risk. Now, going back to the classic 60-40 portfolio, using the US government 10-year bond yield of 2.16% as of June 21st, 2017, if the Smiths had the 40% of their portfolio that was in bonds in a 10-year US Treasury bond, they would have $426,484 by the time they were 65, which would give them $9,212 of retirement income per year. Now, assuming no interest rate risk and prevailing rate stayed the same at 2.16%. And also have to stress, this is a hypothetical example and is not representative of any specific situations, and your results will more than likely vary. In order for Bob and Susie Smith to generate the same $23,712 the DIA, or Deferred Immediate Income Annuity, would provide, the $400,000 that was in bonds would have to turn into $1,097,777 to yield the same $24,684 at a 2.16% interest rate. Expressed another way, the Smiths would have to grow their money at a compounded return of 40% for 3 years straight to turn their $400,000 into $1,097,777. Using Morningstar's safe withdrawal rate of 2.7%, a $1 million portfolio would generate $27,000 of income. If we assume a 60-40 portfolio using 2.7% for the stock portion of their portfolio, that would give us $16,200 a year in income. Now, if we combine that with the aforementioned DIA income of $23,712, if we add those two amounts together, we get $39,912 of income, which is just under 50% more income than the Morningstar number. Okay, so let's recap. Using Morningstar's safe withdrawal rate of 2.7%, $1 million would generate $27,000 of income. Using the 4% rule of thumb, the Smiths could generate $40,000 of income. And using the alternative 60-40 approach discussed today with a 4% withdrawal in equities, the Smiths could plan on $47,712 of income, of which $23,712 would be guaranteed for life. While no strategy is foolproof, we believe all investors should have the amount of income they need in retirement covered by a combination of Social Security, pensions, and annuities. If an investor needs $50,000 to live on, but only receives $35,000 from a combination of their Social Security and a pension, we would aim to find the appropriate guaranteed income product with a goal of managing the $15,000 shortfall. The rest of their funds could then be appropriately allocated using low-cost index or mutual funds. Now, many variants will determine the optimal guaranteed income product for any given client, including but not limited to how many years they can defer, age of client and their spouse, health of the client and their spouse, legacy concerns, how much they live above or below their means, need for principal protection, and their risk tolerance, just to name a few. Now, after we cover your shortfall with the product that will give you the most amount of income given your unique situation, we will then stress test your portfolio using Monte Carlo analysis. The goal is to have an 80% success rate or higher, or expressed another way, having less than a 20% chance of having to make a change along the way. Now, to help guard against sequence of return risk, we will then layer in a worst case bear market scenario using your portfolio's Riskalyze results. If your financial crisis hypothetical scenario showed a decrease of, let's say, 33.9%, we would then simulate your portfolio decreasing by 34% at the worst possible time of your retirement, which for most people will be the year they retire. If your Monte Carlo bear market simulation comes back north of 80%, we know that we are on the right track. If not, we either need to lower the risk in your portfolio or increase the amount of guarantees in your retirement, assuming you aren't willing to lower your standard of living. We want you to feel confident knowing that we have strived to help preserve your retirement. If you are concerned about running out of money and would like our help, please give the Certified Financial Planner Professionals at
the Liberty Advisor
a call today, where your future is our focus.